now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy World Book and Copyright Day.
Did you hear that from me, or did you know that?
I did know that until like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, actually, just about half an hour ago for me too. World Book Day it is, because clearly we don't read enough. Not to put you on the spot, but
yeah.
Do you have time to read books?
I was about to say, I'm pretty guilty of reducing my book reading activities.
All of us. Yeah.
All of us in recent years. Well, not recent, but...
Since graduating college?
Pretty much, yeah.
All right. Not to shame anybody. It's just a shift in trends. We have so much to read and so much to consume online. Mm. But hey, today is World Book and Copyright Day. So time to pick up a book after listening to our show.
Exactly. So listen, then read.
Speaking of distractions, right? All right. So let's get started, Adam. We have a lot of headlines to cover this morning, as always, starting with the presidential office reshuffle. This is our first pick of the day.
New chief of staff.
So President Yoon has appointed five-term lawmaker Jung Jin-suk of the People Power Party as his new chief of staff. What's the latest?
Yeah, so a political heavyweight, a name that's been seen and well-known in the political sphere for quite some time. He announced the appointment in a televised statement at the presidential office. This comes about 2 weeks after the PPP's election defeat. Prime Minister Han Duck-soo and senior presidential secretaries, of course, including Lee Kwan-sup, the former chief of staff, had resigned after the elections. Now, Lee's replacement, Chung, is a close confidant to the president. Yoon expressed hope that Chung will communicate effectively with senior aides at the top office, the cabinet, rival parties, as well as media and civic groups. Chung previously served as the presidential secretary for state affairs during the Lee Myung-bak administration. So he certainly has a lot of experience in terms of presidential office roles as well as parliamentary roles as well. He's also acted as the interim leader of the PPP during a period of turmoil following especially the resignation of former leader Lee Jun-suk. He said he feels it's his responsibility to help the Yoon administration and the president at a time when the government is expected to face difficulties due to the opposition party taking majority in the National Assembly.
Mm. In a separate briefing, Yoon also named his new senior presidential secretary for political affairs, replacing Han Ozap. Tell us more.
Yeah, so another position that doesn't really require parliamentary approval. Mm. It is one of his aides, so he's getting those appointments out the way. The same for the chief of staff as well. Yoon appointed the former PPP representative Hong Chol-ol for the post. Now, Hong is a former two-term lawmaker, and he's the founder, interestingly, of Korea's fifth largest fried, or I should say, oven-baked chicken franchise. I won't say the name. Yoon described Hong as a self-made businessman who will listen to the voices of the people, stressing he has excellent communication skills. Hong said the elections confirmed the public sentiment and the government will have to fill the areas that fell short. Now, during the two briefings also, interestingly, Yoon took questions from reporters. This is actually the first time he did so since November 2022. That was when, of course, his daily morning Q&A sessions with reporters were suspended following a clash between a presidential official and a reporter. Yoon said he plans to discuss people's livelihood issues when he meets opposition leader Lee Jae-myung in the near future. And he also expects it will take more time, of course, to appoint a new prime minister. That involves more of the parliament, and it requires a parliamentary approval as well. So, of course, the opposition won't be happy with any pick, I guess, but they're certainly taking a more careful approach to the prime minister.
It seems both the president and the opposition, because the opposition hasn't named anybody either, but they'll take it slow and it'll be a more timely process to appoint a new prime minister. But for now, we have a new chief of staff and a new senior presidential secretary for political affairs and a renewed way of communicating with the press, the first in a year and 5 months. Q&A with the press.
Yeah, I mean, it was usually the chief of staff, of course, who announced these new positions, but of course, there's no chief of staff. He had to announce the chief of staff, so there you have it.
All right, let's move on to our second keyword this morning. Pyongyang is testing its weapons again, our second pick of the day.
SRBM.
So North Korea fired several rounds of short-range ballistic missiles towards DEC, which the regime says was overseen by Kim Jong-un. What's the latest and, of course, the significance of it?
Yeah, so more tensions and more ramping up of weapons testing to get this technology with hypersonic missiles and warheads up to scratch. The Joint Chiefs of Staff said it detected what appeared to be several short-range ballistic missiles launched from the Pyongyang region at 3:01 p.m. They flew apparently 300 kilometers. They said to have fallen outside Japan's economic zone. The Joint Chiefs of Staff did not provide further details, citing an ongoing analysis. It, as usual, denounced the North missile launches as a clear provocation. The South Korean military has intensified its surveillance and readiness for any further launches. It's also closely sharing information about North Korea's missile activities with the United States and Japan. It marked the North's first ballistic missile launch, actually, since it test-fired a new IRBM tipped with a hypersonic warhead on April 2nd. North Korean state media said Kim Jong-un guided tactical drills simulating a nuclear counterattack involving super-large multiple rocket launchers for the first time. Nordong Shinmun said the drills were conducted within a national nuclear weapons management system. It also denounced recent joint military drills by South Korea and the United States. It has been ramping up its weapons test this year, and the South Korean ministry is closely monitoring as North Korea is believed to be preparing to place a second spy satellite into space after its first launch in November. We call it spy satellite, but in effect, it is an intercontinental ballistic missile test. In essence, of course, it is concern and a violation of UNSC Council UNSC resolutions.
All right, keeping tabs on that front, but it was expected and North Korea continues to spruce up its weapons programs. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
SMA talks.
So Korea and the United States are gearing up the first round of negotiations for the next defense cost-sharing agreement in Hawaii. What can we expect? It seems that the job is to get it done before the U.S. presidential election.
Yeah, that is the plan anyway, of course, because it seems like the kind of polls, opinion
polls.
Look how
careful you are with your wording. Polls indicate that Trump is likely to win, yeah.
Right, right. Possible favoring of Donald Trump to win the November election. But, of course, that's all hypothetical at the moment. Now, the talks for the special measures agreement will take place from Tuesday to Thursday, local time. The Korean delegation will be led by Itaewoo. The team will include officials from foreign defense and finance ministries. From the American side, the delegation will be led by Linda Specht, a senior advisor at the State Department. Specht actually told reporters that the U.S. seeks a fair and equitable outcome to the SMA discussions. Now, the negotiations will come nearly 20 months, actually, before the current agreement expires in 2025. So it is a bit premature. Now, the possible, of course, election of Donald Trump in November seems to have warranted a speeding up of the talks. He could drive, of course, a hard bargain over a new SMA in a way that could cause friction in the alliance, something that was similarly seen when he was president. Now, Washington has recently described Seoul's financial contribution as a strong investment in the U.S.-Korea alliance, hinting that they might seek an increase. Conversely, Korea insists that its share of the cost should remain at a reasonable level. Now, the SMA outlines the financial contributions Korea is responsible for regarding the costs of U.S. troops stationed here. Although the Status of Forces Agreement, or SOFA as it's shortened for, typically assigns these costs to the U.S., the SMA allows Korea to contribute to certain expenses to help ensure stable conditions for the U.S. troops, for example, personnel costs, military construction, and logistics support. However, the current Biden administration is also not expected to be kind of lenient in negotiations as well. The last SMA agreed under the Biden administration after difficult negotiations during the Trump administration, Korea did agree to significant increases in its contributions, linking them to the rate of increase in its national defense budget. So It doesn't mean that any talks or negotiations are going to get any easier under the Biden administration, but it's probably going to be harder under the Trump administration if it does come to be that. We'll have to wait until November, of course.
One of our listeners, Sparky Gershwin, said, not all polls show that Donald Trump is ahead. We understand. These are just projections at this point.
These are projections.
But nonetheless,
this is why I'm careful.
Right, of course. But nonetheless, I think the point that we want to address is that no matter who becomes the next president of the United States, I think defense cost sharing will be a sticky subject, and to set it in stone before the uncertainties, that might be beneficial for Korea, at least.
Yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
R&D.
So President Yoon has vowed to dramatically change preliminary feasibility studies for R&D projects to enable researchers to start their projects promptly. So investing in R&D, particularly in sectors like AI, bio, quantum technologies.
All things that go way above my head. So we'll delve into the complexities of each technology. But it is three sectors that the Yoon administration has been kind of touting as the future generation of new export items and
our bread and butter.
Bread and butter for the future, exactly. He made the pledge while meeting with scientists and engineers at the Kwacheon National Science Museum. It was attended by some 500 professionals from the science, technology, and ICT sectors. He emphasized his commitment to making Korea one of the top three global leaders in AI and semiconductors, advanced biotech, and quantum technology. He stated this effort is part of a strategy to foster Korea to a global science and technology powerhouse by the year 2030. He actually made a similar pledge at a cabinet meeting back in March, actually, where he described those technologies as quote-unquote game changers and vowed to invest more in their research. He emphasized the global race for technological sovereignty and market leadership, noting that Korea needs to be a first mover, in his words, in advanced scientific and technological fields. He promised that the government would reform its R&D support to heavily back both foundational research, which is often unattractive to private investors, and pioneering high-risk research projects. Meanwhile, at the ceremony, he also awarded medals to eight national contributors to science, technology, and information and communications.
All right, we'll leave it there for now so we can move on to our final keyword of the day.
Medical conflict.
So government has stepped back from its original plan to increase the number of medical students by 2,000, but the deadlock in negotiations with the medical community remains unresolved, because what they want is to scrap this conversation altogether and start from, well, ground up.
Yeah, so it seems like I'm saying pretty much the same thing when it comes to this over the past few weeks, but yeah, because nothing much has changed apart from that slight concession from the government this time round. Now, the government sees this move as essentially its last concession, since the deadlines for universities to finalize their admissions procedures are approaching at the end of this month, which will, of course, make any adjustment difficult. However, doctors claim that the government's apparent reversal on its pledge only reinforced the view that the significant hike was a policy mistake. Despite permitting reductions for the 2025 academic year, the government remains committed to incrementally raising the slots by 2,000 annually from 2026 through at least 2029. Prime Minister Han Duck-soo announced Friday that the Yoon administration will accept a proposal made by the presidents of six state-run universities to allow them to voluntarily adjust the number of new medical school students within the 50 to 100% range of the increased quota allocated to them for 2025. In other words, the new slots can be technically halved to 1,000. Now, the Korean Medical Association is continuing to outright reject discussions with the government, insisting on scrapping the increase altogether and starting from scratch, basically. They want to be in on the negotiations from a blank slate, if you will. Now, they have also stated their opposition to the plan allowing medical schools to independently adjust their quotas as well. And they're also refusing to participate in this special committee on medical reform. Amid these tensions, there's growing concern that the resignation submitted by medical professors at the end of last month could take effect on Thursday. So we could have more en masse strikes and walkouts following residents and trainee doctors. So more concerns in terms of a medical vacuum, and the government, of course, still is backing down for next academic year, but not the one after that. So that's where, of course, the medical community is not happy, basically.
Where is this tug of war headed? I mean, it's equally tense 2 months ago and 2 months into it. It feels like we're at a continuously similar spot at a stalemate. This is while SNU doctors have also threatened to block out a day a week to completely not show up to work. So you're right to say that the medical vacuum will suffer even further. Thank you so much, Adam, for today's coverage. Have a great day. Go read a book. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'll try. Very well. I'll see you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.